6:32 up here, Day Hall, Syracuse. We haven't done a show here yet, but the wind's blowing. It's 62 degrees. We're back in springtime mode here. It's starting to feel like summer. We got a month left till I'm free of these classes, this building, this awful bed, but I'm going to stop complaining because we have a wonderful show here today, and we're bringing back one of my favorite guests for the second time. It's always summertime for Snotty Drippin with us on the Bobcast today. Welcome aboard, Snotty.
For all the listeners out there, I'm so sorry that you have to deal with me for the next 45 minutes.
It's one of my favorite things to do, a tough thing to do for a lot of people out there, especially on Twitter. We're going to get into some topics today that I didn't hit on with you in the second episode. We've come a long way since. We're here on episode 24. But if you want to listen to any of those episodes, the place you want to go to is clnsradio.com/Bobcast iTunes. Give us a subscribe. It's the best thing you can do for me. It's the best thing you can do for you because we have some great guests on this show. And if you want to fight me on the Celtics, you want to fight me on anything, find me at Real Bob Manning. That's where I'm always tweeting. We're over 100,000 strong now. Every game night, you can find me there. And the show's page on Twitter is at The Bobcast Show. So that's all you need to know. We're getting going direct from Syracuse. The Celtics have the king of the fourth. We got the king of keeping Twitter in check with us today. And when this podcast drops, you have to drop what you're doing and listen. Get that on iTunes. So, Snotty, let's get right into it. I read on Twitter today that this was weird, and it's something that I always go back and forth about. I'm a pretty healthy guy. I try to stay as healthy as I can. So when I get back and forth information, like I saw on Twitter today, one post saying coffee's good for you, one post saying coffee's bad for you, it just makes my head spin. It seems like there's such misinformation out there on food. We know nothing about food. So right off the bat, I got to ask you, what's your rules when it comes to food? I mean, what are your favorite foods? Do you have any restrictions? I mean, what do you try to go for when you're eating?
Now, the funny thing is that, like, that what you're talking about, Time Magazine tweeted, like,
yeah,
within 30
exactly
minutes of,
what I'm talking
within
about.
30 minutes of each other, one of them said, like, you know, how coffee extends your life. And then 30 minutes later, there's a Time Magazine tweet where it said, like, you know, how hot coffee could be leading to cancer. It's pretty ridiculous. So my rules about food. Yeah, I try to, I'm getting older now. In NBA Twitter terms, I'm a grandpa pretty much. So,
yeah.
I try to lay off the fried food and fast food. You know, I go to the gym 3-4 times a week, do my cardio, try to keep it kind of together. And, but other than that, I mean, just, there's no real rules. I try to lay off the sugar too, man. Too much sugar. I just start feeling gross when I get too much sugar in.
What's your biggest weakness?
My biggest weakness, probably McDonald's fries.
Oh, jeez. You know what it is for me? It's the cookies. If you put a nice, warm chocolate chip cookie in front of me, I'm never going to pass it up. And they got that place Insomnia Cookies here. Oh, it's like that hurts your wallet and your stomach when you go there. Oh, it's a killer combination. Second question I got for you today, asking more about your taste. Do you think music's good today? Are you into any of the artists out nowadays, or are you more of an old school type guy?
I'm definitely more of an old school type guy, but I'm definitely like, I understand if music's just not, if I'm not feeling it, it's just not for me. It doesn't mean it's bad music. It just means it's not for me. So
it's all subjective.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's some stuff like I can't get into any Young Thug music that bad. Like, but like the Migos, they make catchy music. They make good music. Future makes good music. All those little guys, little Uzi Vert, little whatever. That's not for me. But I mean, hey, if it gets the people talking and moving, then that's not bad music. So
we got Travis Scott coming up at campus at the end of the month. What do you think of him?
I have no feelings on Travis Scott whatsoever.
None, so. Just completely neutral.
He is just he's a guy I know who's an artist, and I hope he's doing well, and I hope that his fan base enjoys it.
All right, well, let's get down into some of the business we love talking about here, basketball. I want to get into some of your personal tastes right off the bat. One of the questions flowing through my mind this week, that's how I set up the show. I just write things down that pop into my head over the course of the week, are those middle-of-the-pack teams. I mean, the two ones I'm talking about in particular are the Bulls and the Pacers. They got stars at the top of their roster in Paul George, Jimmy Butler, but they've just hit that mediocrity point. You know exactly what I'm talking about. They're at the bottom of the playoffs. They might get in, they might not, but they're not going anywhere. So they got fantastic players sitting at the top of their roster, a few young guys here or there, but I mean, they just seem stuck in stagnancy. So if you're one of those teams and you're getting knocked out round one this year, what are you doing this offseason?
For the Pacers, they got to just pray that Paul George makes an all-NBA team so they can make sure that when they offer him that extension, they can offer him like the mega deal.
The super extension.
Right, because otherwise there's a better chance that he leaves. I like the Pacers overall more than I like the Bulls. Paul George is awesome, and Jimmy Butler are awesome. They're about the same level of awesome to me. Paul George is more of a pure kind of scoring guy, not quite as strong defensively as Jimmy Butler, and even though I think they're both really good defenders. And Jimmy Butler is definitely more of a nose to the grindstone. I think he's built more to be more of the alpha lead guy. But they're both great. The reason I like the Pacers better than the Bulls is they have Jeff Teague. I think they gave him an extension, or they're about to. He's not bad. I think he's definitely a step down from George Hill, what they had, but he's not bad. And I really like Miles Turner. So I think the Pacers are in a better spot because they do have a young guy who's really going to be really good. They got a decent point guard, and then they have Paul George. The Bulls, on the other hand, I think the Bulls, shit show. Yeah, it really is. That ownership needs to let it go. It looks like they might come back, and I'm already hearing a lot of smart Bulls people saying that, hey, I can deal with Rondo coming back. He plays like this from like the last 15 games. So if they come back with, you know, trying to build around Jimmy Butler and Rajon Rondo in 2018, they deserve all the hell they get. In what, five years now since he left out of Boston, and he kind of flops everywhere he goes, or at least is mediocre everywhere he goes. Except for those assist numbers. That's what everybody says about Sacramento. Well, look at those assists. I'm like, yeah, the team's horrible. What are you doing? So, and he was bad for 80% of his time in Chicago this year, and all of a sudden he has a nice little run, and people are like, hey, maybe this is the time, Rondo. So, it's him and Ricky Rubio. It never ceases to amaze me that, you know, they can be on such bad teams for so long, and people still just. I'm not saying either one of them is bad. I'm just saying that it's funny how neither one of them has any success in the last 5 years, and somehow they still have a huge support system for both.
So that's one of the biggest problems with the league, I think, nowadays, is that you got a lot of those teams stuck in the middle, that they're pretty good, they're pretty solid, they might make the playoffs, but you know they're not going anywhere. I think the biggest problem in the league right now, and this is just a small thing, I think it's something that can be fixed fairly easily, are those flagrant foul calls. They are completely all over the place. Nothing gets in my head during the course of a game like an awful flagrant foul rule. I don't think there's any consistency in the call. It just bogs down the game when they go to a common foul and try to see if they can upgrade it to a flagrant foul. It just seems like such a mess. There was one stretch earlier in the year where Isaiah got ejected in a game, Randolph got ejected in the game for just fairly common fouls. I mean, they might have been bad elbows. I guess the league wants to get rid of those elbows, but that's what's always in my head over the course of any given game, are those awful flagrant foul rules you see. And plus, it doesn't seem like there's any indication between the difference between a 1 and a 2. It just seems like, you know, how violent it looks on the spot or anything like that. I think it should just be, you know, basketball foul, it's not a flagrant, non-basketball foul, it's a flagrant. I think it should be that simple, but it seems to be more complicated than that, the way they call it. What's your biggest problem with the league right now, you know, whether it's big or something smaller like that?
I don't have too much problem with the flagrant foul thing, because my only issue with it is that you're looking at something slow motion frame by frame that happened real time, and you're making assessments of, well, did this guy mean to do this? And that's kind of aggravating. But I mean, I do it. We want to protect players and anything above the shoulders. I get it. So my biggest pet peeve right now probably would be from the players, the foul hunting, where they come off a screen and they just feel a guy behind them, so they just kind of flail and get fouls called. And then from the refs, same call, and the offensive player just, again, just flails. He's not really taking a real shot, and they're giving him 3 free throws. And I get it. This is one thing I'm with Jeff Van Gundy on. He was saying in the game that they need to look at that, because while it's legal, he understands it shouldn't be legal, because it's not basketball.
you're talking about coming across those screens up the top there, and then they get fouled coming around on the three-point shot. I've seen that quite a bit with Isaiah this year.
Isaiah does it. Batum is really good at it. Harden's good at it. But the point I'm getting is, like, it's not even a real shot. They're not really trying to shoot. They just feel a little contact. So they say, oh, let me just fling this up there. I get it, and it's smart basketball to use it while it's there. I wish the league would do something about it.
Do you think there's any issue with the continuation? Because I think the biggest difference between the college game and the NBA game is how much of that continuation they allow. You think they need to call more fouls on the floor?
No, I don't think so. I don't mind that too much. Anything that helps scoring, I'm good with. If you don't put it back on the floor again after you get the contact and you're in motion, that's fine with me. Just get your, you know, take your two steps. If they hit you even on the first step, you take your other step and go. If you don't put the ball on the floor again, I'm fine with that.
We hit the problems right there. I think a lot of people saw going into this season the biggest issue is being the league too predictable, going to be a boring season. That's what a lot of people seem to think coming into this year. But it hasn't been. I feel like as far as Twitter engagement goes, popularity of the league, the numbers, the rating, all that, it's been a fantastic NBA season. We still are yet to see how it's going to end, and it might very well be Cavaliers, Warriors again going at it in the finals. But as far as the regular season goes, it's met expectations. It might even exceeded expectations. What do you think is the biggest reason, and would you agree with that in general that it's been a good season?
I do. It's been the off explosion we've experienced, and a lot of people wrote about it, and it's been an offensive year for the ages. And so, yeah, a lot of people were on the whole kick of, oh, Golden State Cavs, once KD went to Golden State, oh, the season's over, it's ruined, nobody cares. But everybody cares. We're all watching because of what Russell Westbrook's doing, because of what James Harden's doing, because of Isaiah Thomas's offense. Yeah, Isaiah Thomas's offense. Cleveland's falling apart. You know, they've been like a 500 team since January 1st. That's compelling. People want to tune in for that. Golden State, once KD went down, they had that bad stretch. You know, they went 6-6 over a couple weeks, and that's – I mean, people talk. People watch the season. Houston
having good storylines.
Plenty of good storylines. So, yeah, the fact that everyone was whining about, you know, oh, am I going to watch the finals, that's on you. You missed a really good season.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like there's a lot more players that are getting talked about in the upper echelon of the league than ever before. There's going to be a hot discussion on the MVP ballot. I mean, it's one of the more tightly contested MVP races I've seen in my lifetime. And across the board, I mean, we put a lot of stock in what Jokic did this year. There just seems to be one player with almost every team except like the Nets, the 76ers minus Embiid, those type of teams at the very bottom where you can look and say, wow, they got themselves a stud up at the top of their roster. Do you think there's more great players in the league than ever before, or are standards just a little lower than they used to be? Because, I mean, you look at the bottom of the league. Yeah, I mean, Phoenix got Booker, LA's got Russell. We go back and forth on how good he is, but it seems like every team's got a guy.
I was going to say, there's definitely a talent explosion. A lot of really good young talent. LeBron's a top, you know, wherever you want to put him ever, but he's definitely one of the top players we've ever seen in the league. KD's going to be an all-time talent. Steph, Russ, and then, like you said, guys like Devin Booker, he put on a real show the other night against OKC. There's a reason to tune in. Hey, we can laugh about it, but even Deion Waiters was putting on the show in Miami before he got hurt.
Yeah, you know? Syracuse's finest.
Kemba Walker kills. And so there's a lot of talent all over the league. I think this probably, especially at the guard position, is one of the most talent-heavy times the league's ever seen. So when I hear people, like old-timers, about how, oh, the NBA's ruined and the league is in such a bad spot and it's soft, whatever, that's just old people talking because the NBA's in a really good place.
Yep, those old people, they kill you. How do you deal with them, Snotty? What do you do when you hear the old guys complaining about the league nowadays?
I just tell myself to shut up. I just understand that every generation, every time period in the NBA kind of thinks its period was the best. And so a lot of these older guys, I mean, they're the same people, like, it's like Charles Barkley has won his title. And, you know, you got to have the clutch gene. All the stuff that people say that we kind of see is just not true. It's a different league now. This is like I was saying with music, this new stuff is crap. Real music was 90s hip-hop, 2000 hip-hop, because this new stuff is crap. Or I can just realize it's different than that and try to embrace it, you know, and that's what the new NBA versus the old NBA is. A lot of older heads hate the fact that all the players now are pretty chummy. They play the AAU together. They're friends. They talk in the off season, and they hate that. But it is what it is, you know. And I don't think the games are any less competitive.
So Isaiah Thomas, that's one of my favorite topics. I've had a take to Twitter, defend him again and again against both Celtics fans, national guys. And when it comes to the team not getting enough credit, I always feel like it comes back to him and how good of a scorer he's been for them. I think he's in the MVP race personally with how good his offensive rating's been in those clutch moments. He's propelled them to countless wins in close games. So it stuns me every single time when people say, you know, this and that about his height, about his defense, the production. And whenever I see an MVP conversation, you got those top four, Kawhi, LeBron, Harden, Westbrook. But the fact that they don't even mention his name in the conversation just gets to me so much. I think it's a given that he's been disrespected this season for the amount of output he's had. But what do you think of his future? I mean, is he going to keep producing at the highest level for the next two seasons, the next three, four seasons? Do you envision him being a mainstay among the best players in the league? Or are the haters right? Is this just an anomaly that we've seen the last 2 years?
No, it's not an anomaly. It's crazy that we had to even say this because he was a 20-6 guy before he even left Sacramento. He's a legit, you know, now in his prime, he's a legit 25-6, 25-7 at least guy, you know. And this year, he's playing, you know, lights out, almost 30 points a game. So anyone who thinks that 2 years is an anomaly is just being weird.
Crazy.
The things that, like you said, definitely things that are subconsciously always going to affect him are his height and his draft position. Like someone just told me the other day, you know, he had an all-star season as a 51 team. Yeah, I think in the future his best role is a spark off the bench. That's never going to go away because of his height and because of his draft position. As far as his future, this is really tough. It's a tough year because, you know, I think Boston's already locked in as having the best chance of number one pick via Jersey, via Brooklyn. So, it's a point guard-heavy draft, you know?
Yeah.
Does Ainge trade the pick down a little bit and take Josh Jackson? I'd be okay with that, but I mean, it's really hard to see what the path moving forward is going to be because we know Isaiah is notoriously prickly and has a chip on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I mean, let's be real. No matter what the plan is, hey, we're gonna play you two together, whatever. Drafting another point guard is gonna piss him off and it's gonna rankle him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The other equation is, I mean, I even wrote about this for B-Ball Breakdown. I'm pretty sure you saw it. I wrote about how, you know, Boston needs to stop chasing a superstar. He already has one.
Yeah.
He produces like a superstar. I mean, if I just told you his numbers and without his height, without knowing, I'd say, hey, man, this guy's averaging 28, 29 points a game, 6 assists a game for a team that just won 51, one of the top teams in his conference. That's a superstar. No one's
You could argue just when it comes to scoring alone, he's been the best in the league this year. Better than Harden, better in the scoring department alone than Westbrook, because I don't think anyone can guard him one-on-one. I really don't. I mean, you can set up a scheme to try to stop him, but if you just put Tony Allen, Iguodala, any of those guys on him, the way the Celtics play offense, it's just set up for him to find space, and he always does.
He is hands down one of the best. We talk about pure scorers in the NBA, and I almost hate that term, but I mean, Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Isaiah Thomas, those guys are just pure scorers. And to not put his name in there is a farce if you don't realize that. At 5'8 or not, he can be the primary scorer on a really good team. So
wait. Where do you think he ranks in the MVP race this year?
I brought this up, I think, back in December or January, and somebody laughed at me. But, I mean, he's legit. You got to put him. So the top four is Russell Westbrook in some order. Russell Westbrook, Harden, Kawhi. And people keep putting LeBron in there because he's LeBron James. All right, I get that. Isaiah, you got to put him right the next tier down. If you're going to say that's the top four, he's in the mix for five.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the draft. I want to get into that a little bit. That's the only thing I warned you about coming into the show that I was going to quiz you on is the draft. I don't know how much knowledge you have about some of these prospects. I'm getting into the early video watching, breaking stuff down, that kind of stuff, because, you know, we're going to be going on June soon enough. And this draft, 2014 was pretty big with the hype, but, I mean, in terms of number of guys at the top, you can probably go 8-10 deep this year with guys who have huge upside, it seems like. So who are your big four guys you look at that you think can make an impact in the league right away?
I'm really big on Fultz, and I mean, like everybody else is, he's the prohibitive number one pick. Josh Jackson, I just watched. So I don't really start following the college game until maybe January, and I'll start finding guys look film on. Josh Jackson really popped out to me because of his size and his athleticism. And sure, he can't really shoot yet, but he just he seems like he's really smart. So I like Josh Jackson a lot. Fultz, Josh Jackson. I'm not that big on Lonzo Ball. I think he's going to be a fine pro, but in a league that's so heavy at point guard talent, I don't see him as just being some guy who's going to be a superstar.
Yeah.
And he could prove me wrong, but, you know, that weird jumper, and he's athletic for a college player, but I don't think as a pro he's going to really, you know, he's not eye-popping. He's not really that quick when he turns the corner on the pick and roll. So, I don't know. I keep hearing with him, too. Hey, man, you put him with the right players around him, the right system, you know.
There's plenty of guys that can succeed in the right system.
Thank you. So I'm like, are you saying he's like Rajon Rondo? That's what you're telling me? Because I feel like you're hearing about Rondo, too. He just needs the right system. So, yeah. Bro, he needs 4 Hall of Famers and a great coach. That's what you're telling me. So, folks, I got Josh Jackson. I really like De'Aaron Fox. I understand the jump shot issue, and it's funny. I'm not trying to be a hypocrite because I'm a little down on guys like John Wall and Elfrid Payton because they can't shoot, and this guy can't shoot, but he looks so good in college. I don't know. I like him a lot, but I don't know if he's going to be a superstar. I really think that the guy to look out for is Monk. I think Monk's going to be a better pro than like Lonzo Ball.
Mm-hmm. I could definitely see there being guys in this class who fall and make a lot of people pay, like Kawhi Leonard did back in the day, go down to, like, what was he, 14th overall with Indiana, then he ends up going to San Antonio or something like that. I could definitely see a guy like that in this class. And a guy I look at who I love just from what I've seen in him is Jason Tatum with Duke there. He's got everything I want to see out of a guy coming right out of the draft just to make an instant impact. He's got that pro physique. He can create his own shot. He's a slasher. He's a good rebounder. He just has that NBA grit, size, tenacity, even skill.
My question with him, is he a pretty good three-point shooter? I've watched his game. I haven't watched him in like just all season, though. Is he a pretty good three-point shooter?
He was a good college three-point shooter, so we'll see how it translates. But he's not one of those guys who struggles from three-point land like Jackson, like Fox, like you mentioned. There's no three-point issues. It's just how good he's going to be at that level.
I guess because a lot of what you just said about him sounds a lot like TJ Warren without a jumper. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, my thing with him is like, all right, so he's a great one-on-one player, and that's what I see about him a lot is like, you know, he's a great ISO scorer, such great footwork, balance, mm-hmm. all this. But, I mean, if we keep saying you don't want to build around a guy like Carmelo Anthony for the simple fact that that's what he does.
I definitely see a lot of Carmelo in him.
And that's not a terrible thing. I'm just saying I don't know if I want to invest a top 5-10 pick in that.
Yeah, definitely. And the defense is probably his biggest concern. I didn't see a lot of defense out of him in the game I saw up here at Syracuse.
It reminds me a lot of our boy Jahlil Okafor.
Yeah.
Like, we know NBA's trending away from that, but he still did this thing in college, and somehow he still was a really high pick. Even though we knew that the league was trending away from what he did it so well, people just did not make that connection. Like, oh, he's got to be a number one pick. Look, you can, but no. And as soon as he hit the NBA and we saw him getting blown by and not fitting in, oh, man, how can we know this? Well, we do know. So my thing is, yeah, with the modern NBA, do you want a guy that you got to feed the ball and give him 8 seconds to ISO? And, you know, he's great for mid-range and all this. He can get his own shot. But, I mean, the other 4 guys are sitting around watching while he does that. You know,
it's a big concern, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of guys in the draft who you wonder if they're ever going to be able to put the ball in the bucket. But that's the name of the game. And if you can get a guy like that, you know he's going to make an instant impact on your team. And he's probably a better fit on a better team. Like, if Brooklyn – not Brooklyn, of course. They don't have their pick. But say Phoenix took him where he's going to have to be one of their main scorers or even Los Angeles or something like that. I don't think he's ready to be the guy on one of those young teams. I think he's the kind of guy who you want to see slide, end up with one of those middle-of-the-pack teams, see if he can help them. But that's kind of what I look for in a draft prospect. What do you look for? Just we've seen so many busts through the years. If you're looking objectively at a prospect, you talked about fitting the NBA style nowadays. What do you look at with a guy? Because there's so many unknowns. How do you try to mix out possible busts from who you see as being a good contributor?
Let me go back real quick on Tatum. Did you watch a lot of Jabari Parker in college?
Yeah, definitely. He was my guy in that draft. I still love him.
Do you think that what are the chances that Tatum becomes a 20-6 guy like Jabari was last year?
I don't think he's as good as Jabari. I don't think it's that close even.
Oh, this is my problem, though. You see what we're saying? And even with Jabari, the Bucks have looked better since Jabari went down and they replaced him with Chris Middleton. Yeah. Because they need a defender who can stretch the floor and not dominate the ball. It's such a weird thing, man. Like, there's guys who can really play basketball, and you can't call them bad players, but somehow they just don't fit in the NBA system. So it'll be interesting to see with Tatum. I look for tools. I look for, like, the long arms. I look for the athleticism. That's what gets me with De'Aaron Fox. He checked every box, like just the eye test. So I look for guys who kind of pop off the screen, and it sounds silly.
And that's false.
What's that?
That's false. That's absolutely false. Like, he's just so far ahead of everyone at that level. You just knew he was going to be a stud at this next level.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, Drake Fultz. I just, like, and Fox, like, against you know, that you know, they played UCLA, and he just was on another level than everybody else. He just was. And I understand the college game is so different, but when he went for it and he was just on that game, he just, they just had no answer for him. So I think he'll be a good pro. But, yeah, I look like Fultz in his jump shot and Monk in that jump shot. They have – all right, I look also for one elite skill, be it rebounding, be it even like a guy who's just super fast. But those guys, to be able to make shots the way they do, just shot making, and not need a lot of room and time, that's something. A big deal in today's NBA. Because both Monk and Fultz are undersized, but they can elevate on that shot. They just need a sliver of daylight, and they're getting it up, and it's accurate. So that means a lot. So that's it. I look for tools. I wonder how will it translate to the next level. Can I see this guy doing this exact same move against pro athletes? And, a lot, you know, I'm nowhere near 100%, but like I was really high on Norman Powell just from watching tape on him in college. Who else was I kind of high? I hit on a couple guys last year that – people might have been kind of down on, oh, no, this guy's going to be good. And then I really missed on a guy like Malcolm Brogdon because, you know, his question was his athleticism. And I didn't see it in college where, all right, he's good, but just bigger than everybody else. But, no, the kid can really play. So it is a crapshoot, but I think there are certain markers that you can kind of tell.
It's a tough game to play, the draft. No one's mastered it. No one ever will. A lot of the greatest players ever, I feel like, have just kind of fallen into the hands of the great teams that pick them. The only thing that still puzzles me to this day is the Anthony Bennett pick. That's still my biggest head spinner in draft history, and I don't think anyone will ever understand that one. So as long as there's no Anthony Bennett.
That is the ultimate physical tools and college-level production and – you know who else was like that? A guy who went to the Timberwolves. Derek Williams. They were about 6'8", and they were faster than everybody else in college, and they were strong and aggressive, and they could dunk. And that made people think, hey, this guy – but no, it's just different at the next level. And that's
James Young, our buddy James Young.
whatever, dude. That's the prevalent system. But no, especially with power forwards and centers – the undersized guys, it's hard to tell. Because, look, Montrezl Harrell's only like 6'8", 6'9". Mm-hmm. And he just is a beast. He's getting it done in Houston. Would he do that on another team, in another system, when they try to make him traditional power forward? Probably not. You know, but they're playing at the center in Houston, he's thriving. So it's tough. I get it. It's tough for GMs.
All right. So that's our mixed bag of questions with Snotty Drippin. We'll be right back after this break to ask some questions about what he's been up to lately, some stories he's been working on, some personal questions for him, his journey of aspiration to accomplishment. But first, I'm going to tell you about my bookie. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Well, if you're a sports bettor, my bookie's the place you want to try out. I'd recommend that service because it's been good to me. It's been good to our listeners, and they have a very great payout rate. It's just a great experience. If you're betting on a regular basis on sports, that's the site you want to be with because they have a great deal for you through CLNS Radio. Join now, and MyBookie's going to match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. If you put $100 on the table, you're going to get a free $50 on your bankroll to play with. Free money, house money, it's always the best thing when you're gambling. So use their promo code Bobcast, and you're going to activate your offer. Visit mybookie.ag or call 844-900-BETS. That's BETS. Your promo code is Bobcast, BOBCAST. Go out there and win some money for the Bobcast. I'll take 50% of that, Snotty. Anyone who uses that, I'll split it with you. How about that?
I'll take it.
All right, free money. Play, win, and get paid with my bookie. We're going to be right back on the Bobcast talking about some of Snotty's recent ventures. See you after this.
Hi, this is Larry H. Russell with a message on behalf of the network. As the leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics, CLNS Radio delivers fans the most provocative discussion and analysis from the most noted personalities in the Celtics realm of the World Wide Web. Home to the number one rated weekly podcast, which covers the NBA's winningest franchise, Celtics Beat is released first thing every Sunday morning. We deliver the hottest of takes and get the lowdown on all things Celtics from players, league executives, and the biggest names in the national basketball media. And it doesn't end there. The original Celtics podcasters John Duke and Justin Poulin have returned. Available Mondays on clnsradio.com. Celtics Stuff Live is back and better than ever before with featured guests that are the most familiar voices to Celtics Nation. Basketball in Boston is heating up and you don't want to miss any of this. Download the CLNS Radio mobile app now. Available for your iPhone and Android.
Welcome back to the Bobcast, our journey from aspiration to accomplishment. We got into a mixed bag of questions with Snotty Drippin' in our first half. Now we're going to ask him about what he's been up to since episode 2, one of our premiere episodes back in June a year ago. We're getting back to a year with the Bobcast, so I thought we'd catch up with Snotty, see how things are. Since you left, Snotty, you know, you had your Be Polite challenge way back in last June. That's come and gone. And you had a new name, J Hole Ass Hoops. That's come and gone. You're back to being Snotty Drippin'. Why the new name and why the return to the old one?
So the new name came about because somebody at my site, B-Ball Breakdowns, you know, they didn't say this in complaint. We were just talking about it, and I started talking about the name change, and they were like, yeah, I went to get credentials for a game, and they looked at our site and just looked me up, and they came back and said, you know what, there's somebody on the on your site who goes by the name Snotty Drippin'. It's hard to take you guys seriously. And the kid really didn't get credentialed because of that. So I was like, you know what? I just was kind of straighten up and go mainstream, I guess. I was hoping maybe that was, you know, but it's crazy I did that. But I mean, even before I did that, I'm always being invited on podcasts. I talk to a lot of national guys all the time. And so I thought it would legitimize me, but it didn't.
Yeah.
It did the exact opposite. It's funny. And social media follower count is not the way to like measure success at all. But I did notice that, like, you know, I got a lot of followers, and then, like, they kind of stopped the whole time I changed my name. And then, I also feel like I kind of, you know, I mean, I've been studying for 5, 6, 7 years on social media. I got kind of, you know, I've known this, Snotty Drippin'. So people I followed for years actually unfollowed me when I changed my name because they didn't realize it was me, and they just thought it was some random account. Yeah. And, I changed it back, and it just feels more natural. And it's funny, a lot of guys DM'd me, a lot of national writers and even some TV personalities are like, hey, I'm glad you changed it back because that other name, it just didn't fit.
Snotty, it's iconic. Brand, so. Mm-hmm. Is going mainstream something you want to do?
I mean, I think all of us who write and podcast would, you know, that's kind of the back of our head. We'd love to somehow go big time, SB Nation or ESPN or something. I mean, we'd all like it. So, yeah, it'd be cool. But, I mean, it's not – obviously, I didn't straighten up and just say, well, I'm going to only – talk about this and write this way and tweet this way because I want to be seen. No, and I didn't do that. So I just think, like, you know what? Social media is fun and the writing and the interacting basketball is fun. And if I was snotty before, I would be snotty again.
Well, my favorite thing about you is you're hilarious. That's hard to find in writing. The number one rule I have in writing in general is if you're not funny, don't try to be funny. And I think you're a pretty funny guy, so you got that first check mark in my box. Second of all, I think you're very thought-provoking. Your pieces always bring up very interesting topics on a larger scale, NBA level. And your most recent one was about Blake Griffin, kind of the change in his game from being a groundbreaking type of player to a more irrelevant player, as you described there. Want to dig me a little deeper into that piece and the thought behind that. Do you think we're starting to see Blake Griffin fade away and his best days are behind him?
I use the word irrelevant, and it's kind of harsh, but I did that obviously to kind of grab the reader's attention. And it's kind of true. I mean, listen,
it is.
A lot of people, A lot of people read it and said, you know what, I haven't talked about Blake Griffin all season. And sure, he was hurt for a chunk of it, but he's been back. He's had some good games. And people like, if we say, hey, top 10 players in the NBA, no one except for Clippers fans would name Blake Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time a couple years ago, he finished like second or third MVP voting. He was up there. He was in 2014, he had won the season for the ages. And I did some number crunching in that piece for B-Ball Breakdown. And he has one of the better seasons of any power forward or any big man ever. As far as, well, most unique seasons. Only a small handful have matched him as far as it was like Charles Barkley, Kareem, the numbers he put up. And maybe I'll even bring up and look at it. But the point was, at one point, Blake Griffin seemed to be on the cusp of taking over the league and being considered a top five, top six player right there with Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. Since that time, Chris Paul hasn't changed his game. DeAndre Jordan has kind of increased his game as far as...
Yeah, he's been better.
Yeah, but let's be real. He catches lobs and he rebounds. That's what he does. So it's not like he's taking touches time from Blake Griffin. And Blake just kind of stagnated. His rebound is like dropping every year since 2014. His field goal percentage is dropping. He's taking more and more of these mid-range shots. And instead of making him better by stressing the floor, it's not really helping. It seems like his game is really stagnant. And so is the Clippers.
Do you think the style of the game has gotten away from him, or is it just more of a drop-off on his part? I mean, he has been injured. He has been off the court here and there. And let's be real. The Clippers aren't title contenders anymore. They're above any of those middle-of-the-pack teams we talked about earlier in the show. They might even be the best among those teams, but they're not on the Rockets level, Spurs level, Warriors level anymore. You can't see them touching any of those teams. Do you think Blake Griffin's the biggest reason they've dropped out of that echelon?
I think he could be the reason that could save them from being just another run-of-the-mill good team. I think it's more on Doc and ownership. I don't think the Clippers passed the game passed him by. It's passed the Clippers by. The Clippers run a very traditional offense, right? Chris Paul is that essential. He's the perfect point guard, and I understand. People love him. It's not his fault, but it kind of is. He likes to play slow. I was saying how just back in 2014, I think they were like maybe the sixth fastest team in the NBA, and as far as pace-wise, where they ranked, and now they're like 16th. That's a problem. It's called pace and space for a reason. They don't have the pace anymore. You know, another big issue is that the league now is you want to stretch the floor as many spots as possible. The Clippers have a very traditional lineup. Blake Griffin is, even though he can turn and face up from 18, has a nice little jump shot, so did Karl Malone. Blake Griffin is still a traditional power forward, and guess what? They have a traditional center. Now, for the Jazz last year, it worked because those guys were both defensive monsters, and it still didn't work because they didn't make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
This team has key traditional power forwards. Chris Paul likes to be very deliberate. And they start another non-scorer. They have two non-like guys who can't do anything. DeAndre's great at catching lobs, vertical space, and all that. But Luke Mabaute, I never say his name right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's been a long downfall at that position for them too.
They never have been able to get it right. So they have two guys who there's no spacing really, and all the spacing is from them running their sets and JJ Redick running around, and Chris Paul himself working from mid-range. So, I mean, they're running a traditional offense and offensive rating. This is where the numbers don't always match up to being a contender because they always are going to be a top offense. Their defense has kind of fallen off a lot lately. And even though they're top offensive by offensive rating, they don't get up and down and shoot the threes the way that you kind of need to win.
We've seen Blake Griffin move towards irrelevancy, like you said, this season, or more irrelevant than he's been before, if we're just saying in relative terms. On the other end out west, we've seen Westbrook go right up to the top. I mean, you're talking top three players in the NBA. You have to put him right up in that conversation now with the season he's had, even if the Thunder haven't won. When he's had a season like he's had, with the numbers, I mean, you talk about number stuffers all the time. He's gone beyond number stuffing. Like, you can't just stuff the stat sheet with the stats he's put up this year. It's one of the greatest seasons of all time. I don't care about the record. I don't care about any of that stuff. And you must feel pretty vindicated because you've always been a Russell Westbrook guy. That's one of your biggest crusades, even through all the Kevin Durant years that year. You've always thought he was one of the best, and he's proven it this season. So, what have you taken away from Westbrook's season? Because a lot of people have been downplaying his MVP credentials because of the team's record, even downplaying him as a whole, the turnover numbers people have brought up, the usage amount people have a problem with. I mean, this is the year of downplaying success, I guess, between him and Isaiah Thomas. So how are you going to respond to the Westbrook haters?
I don't. I let his play do it, and I let the fact that it is, you know, considered a top two or three MVP candidate do it. And you're absolutely right, and I appreciate you recognizing that. I remember, like, maybe 3 years ago, around this time of year, I was saying that he was, you know, like a top three or four point guard. And some really smart people that we both follow just, you know, they basically were making fun of me, you know, and they started throwing out efficiency stats. And I said, all that, you can say all these numbers and true shooting, all this you want. The fact that you need some guys with force and he can't be stopped. And I'd take a play like that over Chris Paul any day. And they laugh and stuff. But now, I mean, that's basically what it is. The guy really just can't be stopped. He stops himself. And I think that's what makes him so compelling, the fact that he's so human. I think he plays the way a lot of us would play if we woke up tomorrow and could jump out the gym. And he plays a lot with this. He goes out there and just plays. And he said it himself. He goes, I leave it on the court. Sometimes good results, sometimes bad results. But I always make sure I give full effort. So, yeah, it is nice to see it. And it also, it's like the uncanny valley. The closer he gets to being that elite kind of top three, top four guy, the more we see all his flaws and the more we see the flaws of that team. Yeah. And I'm already turning toward my eyes towards next year, where I think if they don't make some pretty major moves this summer, or at least one major move this summer, I could definitely see him opting out, you know, summer of 2018 and saying, well, this is not working. Because he's going to kill himself.
Even with the money he could make, I mean, he could sign a contract there that could make him upward over $50 million a year toward the back end of it.
You know what? I think, is that this summer they can offer him that money?
It's I don't know if it's this summer or the summer after, but he's lined up for that. He's one of the super max contract guys. Him and Harden are going to be able to make the crazy money.
Yeah, him and Harden both, the league pulls a little chicanery, and even though they both shouldn't be eligible for it, the league both give the teams a wink and made them eligible. And so in that case, you're absolutely right. I think it's a lot less likely he's going to leave, right? I mean, $210 million is a whole lot of money, so versus $170 or whatever he takes somewhere else. So, yeah, it's a good chance he doesn't. I feel bad for him because I don't like seeing great players in situations that aren't ideal. Houston is an ideal situation for James Harden, right?
Yeah.
Shoot everywhere. He's an MVP candidate because he's a great player, and they have streamlined that roster for him perfectly. They've tailor-made it for him.
How would you feel about Oklahoma City adding Blake Griffin, the guy we just talked about?
That would be awesome because Blake's still a great player. It would take a lot. Right now, I think OKC is about capped out, so they'd have to move a lot. Either move a lot or, you know, move Enes Kanter. That would help a lot to get Kanter in the deal, That would be awesome. I think Russell Westbrook and Blake Griffin running up down the court would be just a ton of fun. You can let Blake run the second units, and he can just, you know, he's a great passer. He's an underrated passer. And hopefully you get him back on the block a little bit, rebounding better. His rebounding has been dropped every year.
Yeah.
So I think he needs a change of scenery, and that might just, you know, kind of boost his career again. So I think it'd be a great move.
Let's talk about your process a little bit over at B-Ball Breakdown. It's something I wanted to get in the last episode, but we didn't have quite enough time for it. You've been writing there for quite a while now. Can you take me through how you ended up there, how you knew that site was right for you, and kind of your process when you're writing articles for there? Because you do come up with these great think pieces over there, like the Griffin article.
The best thing about B-Ball Breakdown is that there's no kind of quotas. And no, our editor, Jesse Blanchard, does demand that a certain amount of articles a month or anything. I tried a couple sites like that, and it just, I'm not a good deadline writer. This is probably why I'll never go mainstream. I'm just, you know, you tell me you gotta write 4, 5, 6 articles a month, I'm gonna struggle because the articles will start coming out sounding like 10th grade report, book reports. You know, I don't write like that. So, yeah, I just watch a lot of basketball, and I follow a lot of the different narratives and stories, and like this one, I just kind of realized, you know, Blake Griffin's great. I was watching the game, and I think he had a triple-double in, like, February sometime. But, I mean, the team's just kind of scuffing along, and then, you know, Chris Paul's considered this great. He is. I won't say considered. He's a good player, a great player. Blake Griffin's a great player, and somehow they're still kind of scuffing along, and they're nowhere near a team like San Antonio that has Kawhi Leonard and a bunch of role players, basically. No matter what you did, there's a bunch of role players there. So it's a really interesting topic, and I just kind of started writing about it. So that's my process, man. I like the conversation of basketball. I like to write in a way that just, sure, it might be not confrontational. Might be a little controversial, but I also want to make sure I include a lot of numbers and anything I think that can back it up. So I'm not just out in left field saying, making stuff up. So Matt Moore of CBS Basketball actually read my piece and retweeted it, and he's like, "Hey, this is good." And he said, "Oh, but you know, I don't believe his career is over. I haven't given up." And sure, I wasn't saying give up Malik Griffiths has been. I'm just saying right now he's kind of irrelevant.
I'm going to be going to battle with Matt next week. It'll be fun fighting him on the Celtics because he's one of my main culprits at underplaying the Celtics at the national level. So nice plug for the next show right there.
Give me advice with Matt. With Matt Moore. Matt, I hope you listen to this. I know you probably won't. I don't know. He's a busy guy, right? But my thing with Matt, I noticed he does this, and he's really good at it. And I wish more people just kind of realize what he's doing. Very tongue-in-cheek. He likes to poke at different teams. And he does it in a way that, I've seen him do it with the Celtics.
Yeah.
He's very, very sneaky with the shade. Oh, that's really nice for them. Good for them. And he's really, really, really – so I noticed he does that, and I think I know he does it to get the conversation going. And he's a funny guy. So just try to take it easy on Matt a little bit. I'll try my best.
We're going to have a good conversation, though. Talking about Twitter, I mean, Matt's a great conversation starter on Twitter, one of the main centerpieces of a basketball Twitter, I'd say. And so are you. I mean, you got $22,000. I'm sure you'd like that. 22,000 followers.
Yeah.
Instead, you got 22,000 followers, a little less valuable. But you're one of the main conversation drivers on Twitter. Why do you think people come to you? Is it because you're a big villain, you think? Is it because you drive great basketball conversation? Why do you think the masses of basketball Twitter have come to follow you?
I do think because of the conversational, and I think I got away from it this year a little bit, and I need to start getting back into that, where I would just kind of have a stream of consciousness on and have open conversations on there about things going on in the league. And it did get to the point where I let guys who were really confrontational like kind of get into it with me. That's silly. So I'm making sure I even put in my bio, I'm not here to argue. I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, I can say things you don't like. I said the other day, I would take Dame Lillard over Chris Paul right now if I'm making a team. I mean, I want a guy, he can give me 28, 6, and 5. He's an offense unto himself in a modern way. I don't want that. I want that over Chris Paul. And people, you know, they laugh and they say, but we'll, in 2 years, we'll be saying the same thing. We'll be like, oh, I can see why Dame is such a valuable player and why Chris Paul's kind of fallen to the wayside. So it is what it is.
Let's talk about your basketball game a little bit. When you're out playing on the court, what kind of player are you out there? I know you play quite a bit of pickup just like I do. What's your best fundamentals on the court? What's your worst fundamentals on the court?
I got a nice mid-range game. I'm definitely a score-first kind of guy. Decent passer out of the post. I play anywhere from like 3 to 3, 3-4. I could be a hybrid. I could man and defend some centers because I'm really big. I'm a big guy. I can send you footage of the game we played in 2012 All-Star game.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, we have pictures. I'll ask my man, the no-look pass, Ray, he had the footage somewhere. I'll ask him if we can find the tape. And, I played out there with the J.E. Skeets and all those guys from the starters, and it was fun. I think Matt Moore was there. I think Zach Harper was there. We had a little pickup, and I crushed the first game. Games. I was working them over, so that's my game. See what am I lacking at? Perimeter defense. I don't like to step out. You give me the pick and roll against a smaller, quicker guard, I might be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And
the pick and roll is tough to defend out there.
Probably 3-point shooting. I don't have 3-point range. I could hit it if I'm wide open, if I'm feeling it. But I'm like Draymond. I'm not a real good 3-point shooter. I'm a timely shooter.
Mm-hmm. So you're a Celtics fan. We'll move on to that a little bit. I want to have this conversation with you as well. I think you called yourself a bad Celtics fan in the past. We're definitely very different brands of Celtics fans. I'm always out there stepping up for the team, defending what they're doing. And defending this team's success is probably my number one job, I'd say, because I think it gets undermined a lot. Meanwhile, back a couple years ago, our biggest dispute was whether or not the team should tank. And I think that kind of got vindicated on my end, where they've ended up going from that very humble beginning of the team. So, you know, what ultimately made you a Celtics fan when you were getting into the league? How did that end up becoming your team? And what are your expectations of them?
So I do. I've acknowledged on the last couple pods I've done that it's very true. I've kind of become a Zen fan where I realize that everything I kind of railed against early on in the rebuilding process, I mean, we're number two in the East and almost number one in the East. And, you know, we have an all-star and we have cap space. We got picks coming.
You didn't want Isaiah Thomas, I remember.
Oh, no, I don't. And you know what? It's funny. A more negative person would say this offseason coming up is exactly the reason why I didn't want him. Because here it comes. We got to pay him $25, maybe $26 million. And even if it wasn't that, I mean, you still got to pay the guy because he's a starting caliber, really good all-star point guard.
Mm-hmm.
But the draft that's going to have, you know, point guards at the top, and we have a good shot at the number one pick. It's a good problem to have, but it's a problem. It's a problem that, you know, Avery Bradley said it. Hey, LeBron James is putting Isaiah in the pick and roll, and we didn't help him out, and he got killed. It's a problem. That's a legit problem. Boston's a really good team, but I said this on Twitter. I was like, you don't build a car that has, you know, one smaller tire and a hole in the windshield, and once it's built, you complain about the way it rides and complain about the hole in the windshield. You knew it was there. You built it like that.
Mm-hmm.
We built it a great point guard. We did. This is one of the problem that comes with it. Actually, when I first started watching basketball, I was a big Bulls guy. I was alive and around and cognizant of the MJ Bulls days. And when that broke up, I mean, Chicago was a dumpster fire. And, you know, I was a young fan, but, you know, the Bulls were my first real, like, diehard fanatic experience in the NBA. And I wasn't feeling them. So Boston had Paul Pierce, the guy Antoine Walker. They just, you know, they were exciting. They were young. I didn't give a damn about wins and losses. They were fun. They were a lot of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Even when Kentucky coach was there, I got the name. Patino. When Patino was there, he tried to make them play like a college, you know, game. He had Ron Mercer and he had them trapping. And he had Walter McCarty. That was fun. It was fun, even though they weren't that good. So that was when I stuck around for the bad years of just Paul Pierce, and then Antoine, you know, throwing up shots. I loved Antoine Walker. I loved him playing the rake. Looking back, he wasn't a very good player, but he was fun. And so that's where I got into Boston. And so my thing with them now, sure, this is where me and you are different, I think. I still so clearly remember that title in 2007, that first and second round.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about here. I think there's still a lot of Celtics fans stuck on that 2008 team and how amazing that year was. And the fact that right now it doesn't feel like that, they're still kind of hesitant to pull on. And that's why I do think this is a big postseason, because if they can get back to being in a seven-game series with LeBron, I think they'll pull a lot of those fans back.
I mean, and so in the last couple of weeks, when Cleveland came in and smacked our heads, and then when Atlanta came in, we went to Atlanta and got smacked, I'm getting a very, and this is going to piss people off, and you're probably going to snap at me, I'm getting a very 2015 Atlanta Hawks vibe from our team, in that we win a lot of regular season games, but our flaws are just huge, and there's teams that can just take advantage of our two flaws, which is no rim protection and no rebounding. And, like, you know, Al Horford, as good as he is, I think he's worth the money. But he's meant to be a Batum third option, not a second option.
Yep, and that's the problem right now.
As a second option, he gets exposed a lot, and he gets responsibility put on him that he's not made for. So I am already cringing a little bit about this postseason. And I won't be shocked at whatever happens. I'll be very happy if we go deep in the postseason. I wouldn't be shocked if the postseason doesn't last as long as you want it to last. And it is what it is. We can't.
It's not going to be the first round, though. It's not going to be the first round.
Let's hope not.
If not, I'm going to have to take a very long break from Twitter. Let's just say that. This is off the Evan Turner departure. Evan Turner, I'm always going to remember him as the player who I couldn't stand when he first got here. And then I realized what he meant to the team's come up, how important a role he was in the growth of the team from the very beginning of that rebuild. And now he's someone I love for life. I really want to have him on this show. That's like my dream right now, is getting him on this show. Is there any player in all your years of watching who you couldn't stand at one point and then you ended up learning to love them, just like Evan Turner with me?
I just know that at least one of us loves Evan Turner. I don't. I can't stand the guy. I couldn't stand when he was with us. I don't care. On his good games, I would just begrudgingly saying, okay, he didn't kill us this game. Bad games, I'd say, yeah, I know it because he freaking sucks. So at least one...
He was so good for the system. I'll always admit that. The system is what made him great here. He stinks in Portland now.
He was still a net negative. He was not that good for the system. Don't fall for the okey-doke.
What about those two games where he was fantastic, getting on the rebounds, defending on switches, and creating his own shot against Golden State? He was the reason they beat Golden State on the road last year. Biggest reason.
Well, why did we beat him this year? He wasn't there, so don't even bring him up anymore.
I'm looking for his jersey online right now. I'm trying to see if I can find it for $20 or so. So let's move on from that. Another question I have for you, you'll probably be able to answer this one. Who is someone right now that you feel is underappreciated at the national level, any player across the league, that you think soon enough a lot of people are going to be talking about? Like, who's someone who's just on the middle of recognition right now, kind of like a Mike Conley back in the day, that you think everyone will be talking about, like Mike Conley now?
Chris Middleton.
That's your guy?
Chris Middleton and James Johnson. Even though James Johnson's getting a lot of love right now.
I'm glad you brought up Johnson, because I discussed Middleton a lot on the last show, but I think this is James Johnson's big breakout season.
He has been phenomenal, and I've loved him even when he was in Toronto, before he really got into the MMA and stuff. So, but he's one of those players, man. Like, I feel almost like a more athletic Udonis Haslem, as far as you want him on your team because he's not scared of anybody, not gonna back down from anybody. If you really had to go out in a street fight, he'd be right there beside you. He actually is a smart player. He can really play. So it's not like he's just a tough guy there, you know, slapping people around. He can really play. I mean, he's one of the, if you look at the numbers, even the vast numbers love him. He's been one of the best ISO scorers in the league this year. So I'm really high on him. Lucky for him, I think he's up for, you know, somebody's going to sign him this summer. I hope he's not in a long-term multiple-year deal. And he deserves it.
All right, before you go, we made you do this last time. I think you picked Cleveland to win the finals last time, and you were right. I was wrong about that one. Who do you have this year? Who's gonna hold the trophy at the end of the year?
I got to just say, again, it's so hard to pick against LeBron. Even as bad as they look right now and as good as Golden State looks right now, and KD's just getting back, and last night they still look awesome without Steph. I don't know, man. It's really like my head wants to just say Golden State, you know, that until somebody beats them, it's got to be Golden State, as long as they're healthy. But I'm going to just go with the conference pick, and I'm going to give LeBron his props and say that somehow, some way, LeBron will find a way to overcome the big four in Golden State.
I think there's some issues LeBron might run into in the East, especially if they have to play Toronto. I think they could give them a long series. They can't beat them, but I think they could give them a long series. But when I look at the Warriors, they've avoided the Spurs the last couple of years of their great run. They haven't had to play them for seven games in the postseason. Could you see San Antonio pushing them to the brink?
No. I think last time they played, I think Golden State just beat the brakes off them. I think, again, a lot like I feel about Boston with Isaiah Thomas. When you're so dependent on Kawhi Leonard, and Golden State can take Kawhi Leonard out of the equation, right, by just, you know, blanketing him with Iggy and KD and even Dre and take time on him, it's going to be so hard for the other guys to step up enough to overcome Golden State scoring 120. I just don't – we've seen this the last couple of years from Spurs, though. They're great. I'm not trying to downgrade them by saying this. They're a great regular season team. They're going to win a lot of games. They don't have an extra playoff gear. You know, 2014, they had it. Obviously, they had put on one of the best with that 13. Which year they had the shooting display? That was 14. They had the best shooting display we've ever seen in the finals. And that was just like that was awesome. They're not that team anymore. So, I don't think any team really is going to push Golden State in the playoffs until they get to the finals.
All right, nice talking with you today, Snotty. I had to have you back on sometime this year, and I think right before the playoffs was the right time to do it. Anything you got coming up the pipe on B-Ball Breakdown?
We're going to start some playoff previews here soon. I think I got the OKC Houston series to talk about, and I'm going to write something. I've asked about something we talked about earlier in the show. I think I'm going to write something on how, you know, this is supposed to be the lost season that nobody cared about, yet everybody cares about it. So that was a lot of fun. So.
All right. Well, thanks for being aboard with us today. You're one of the best guests we have on here. And we'll have you back probably sometime over the summer. See what's going on at that point once the dust has settled. Have a good one. That's at Snotty Drippin'. Peace, man.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for having me on. Hey, man. And hey, continue success on your show, man. Congrats. You're blowing up.
I hope so. Maybe one day I'll have $22,000 or 22,000 followers. I'll take one or the other.
You can have them, bro. Take mine. You have all.
All right, peace out. Have a good day, Snotty.
All right, bro. Peace.
Snotty Drippin', that's episode 24. And before we get you out of here, let's give you a great offer from Blue Apron. Blue Apron is your fresh delivery service. And they have brought up 150 farmers, rancheries, fisheries across the United States. They're going to give you the best meal you can. I'm moving to South Campus. We went down there a week ago. We got kitchens down there. We have everything we need to prepare some good food. So if I'm not going to the supermarket every week next school year, I'm going to want to work with Blue Apron because they're the only delivery company out there that custom fills your needs, when you want stuff delivered, what kind of stuff you want delivered. And there's so much variety that pretty much every week you can get a different kind of dish. If you're vegan, they got the kind of foods that suit your dietary needs, allergies, all that. Blue Apron is going to accommodate you with the meals you need to fit your lifestyle, and it's a lot more affordable than going to the grocery store, let me tell you, especially if you take advantage of our deal through Blue Apron. Bobcast listeners are going to get 3 free meals with free shipping when you order your first 3 meals with Blue Apron. All you have to do is go to blueapron.com/bobcast to check out this week's menu and get those 3 free meals with free shipping. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/bobcast. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Thanks to Snotty for being aboard with us today. Thanks again to everybody who's been listening the last few weeks. We had Josh Eberle on last week, 10 NBA questions with him. Like I said earlier in the show, Matt Moore coming aboard to fight me on the Celtics. That's probably going to be the main topic of that show because I've been waiting to have my showdown with him. Snotty Drippin, like I said, you can find him on Twitter if you haven't already, at Snotty Drippin. Great, great tweets. Fantastic guy. He's hilarious. He's insightful. He's all of that. He's everything you want in your analyst. Longer show than usual today. Thanks for sticking with us through it all. Had to dig through a lot of stuff with him, but we'll be back next time with Matt Moore. I'll see you then. And the DJ Loon episode. Gonna try to fix that ASAP. For now and for later, I'm at Real Bob Manning. Find the show, clnsradio.com/bobcast iTunes. Give it a subscribe. This is the Bobcast, a weekly tour of sports and pop culture. Peace.